Welcome to the provocative world of cis society, where we fearlessly embrace taboos around sensuality, intimacy, and sexuality. This is Taboo Talks, where no topic is off limits. Join us as we expand our compassion and embrace our shadows and light. Hello, we are Cis Society, a global community that fearlessly explores taboo topics around our sensuality, intimacy, and sexuality. And this is Taboo Talks, a weekly conversation where we dive in with leading minds in order to bring shadow to light. And today we are diving even deeper into this topic of gender identity that has just been so fascinating. And we are joined by Hallie Dulcimer. Hallie is an improviser, dance artist, and teacher whose work and creative practice are rooted in the belief that inhabiting our bodies in real time is a deeply radical act, one that we can model for each other as an invitation to remember ourselves as part of a larger collective body. And I am just so excited for this conversation, sure to be full of alternative perspectives, ideas, and viewpoints around this topic that we've been exploring. So welcome onto our show, Hallie. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you, Alfina. Thanks, Heather. I'm really glad to be here with you both. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really happy to have you here. Upon initially connecting with you, we had a pretty deep dive around this concept of gender identity, and something that you shared with me really stuck with me, and I would love for you to dive in, or you know, just share a bit more about it in general if it calls. And it was around this concept of how you deconstructed the masculine and feminine energies, and they were feeling intense for you to connect to the concept of like one or the other. And so you moved to a space that felt good for you in your own center and your own truth. And yeah, I often reflect back on that conversation, and it was just really powerful and transformative for me. So I was grateful for your truth illuminating out into my orbit. And yeah, I would love to just dive right in and have you share a bit more about your journey with gender identity, and what's alive for you now.
Sure. Thank you for the broad invitation, trying to orient towards where to start. Gender is a tricky business, and honestly, it feels like a big trap, and a trap very much by design. And I think it's hard to separate my own story out from the context of the society that I live in. Like, there's a really, I can really focus on details, and I also really like to take a wide view, and the both and of that in terms of my own kind of wrestling with gender is that as an AFAB person, a person assigned female at birth, which is such a big thing, right? Sorry, I feel like my mind is wanting to go in 12 directions, so I'm gonna take a breath. Okay, so the thing about gender and about it being a trap is that we have so many cultural and contextual and societal associations with gender, with what it means to be a woman, to be a man, to be a boy, to be a girl. And we only have these two options that contemporary Western society is giving us. And there are a lot of prescribed behaviors that go along with these assigned identities. And we're born, and like somebody takes a peek at our genitals, and it's like, you go in this box. And like, these are the things you're allowed to like. These are the things you're allowed to want. These are the people you're supposed to be attracted to. These are the ways you're allowed to behave. Like, you know, you have a vulva, and they're like, okay, you're gonna like soft things and pretty things, and you're going to be sweet, and you're going, you know, and you have a penis, and they're like, okay, like you get to roughhouse and you get to do all of these, and you get to be aggressive, but like you're not allowed to cry, right? And a lot of these stories sound like cliches, sound like stereotypes, sound outdated, but they are, I think, the water that we're swimming in. And especially for those of us who are swimming in more alternative waters, I think it's important to remember how pervasive these really archaic ideas about gender roles still are in most of society. And so there's something about how we break that down, and there's so much complexity in how this is talked about, and there's talk about biological difference and how that shapes preferences and how that shapes our brains. And I want to challenge that, because in the sense that our gendered training starts at birth, and it often even before we're born, right? Like there's the whole gender reveal thing, and often for health screenings, like the sex of a baby is shared with the parents before they're born. And because of all of the conscious and often unconscious associations that we have with gender, we start to shape the way that we perceive and communicate with babies often before they're born. We buy things for them that are going to shape their preferences. There was a study that they made, a really short BBC like documentary about a handful of years ago, that did a study with randomized grownups spending 15 minutes in a room full of toys playing with babies that were, I'm going to put air quotes around, cross-dressed. So babies with vulvas assigned female were put into boy colors and boy outfits, and babies with penises were put into dresses. And random participants were handed a baby in a room full of all kinds of toys, of stuffed animals, of dolls, of toy trains, of those like really cool spatial puzzle toys. And without fail, the babies in dresses were held and coddled and given soft things to hold and dolls to play with. And the babies in pants were given like mobility toys and walked around on push bikes and given puzzle toys. And so from basically the moment that we're born, when our brains are the most plastic they will ever be, our preferences and intelligences are being shaped by our caregivers and by the outside world, right? If you give a baby toys that train physical prowess and puzzle problem solving abilities, spatial puzzles, like you're training math and science abilities, you're training physicality. If you give babies soft things to hold and you prevent them from hurting themselves, you are teaching, you're shaping the brain in a different way. And so I think there's something that is so fundamental in how gender roles shape us from the very beginning of our lives that that it makes it really hard often for those of us who don't feel that we fit in the box to know how to relate to the gender that we're assigned. And there are some of us who feel that more acutely, but I actually think that that is a fairly universal experience that we all have of being like, okay, I'm supposed to like this thing and I'm supposed to talk this way. And I'm, you know, there's so many ways that that in our desire to belong, in our desire to be loved, in our desire to be good, that we conform to what is expected of us in ways that are actually a compromise of the truth of who we are. And this is such a long ramble. Thank you for bearing with me.
This is good. This is a good ramble. I'm with you. I'm with you every word.
Thank you. And so coming back to my personal story, When I went to college in 2001, I was introduced to the concept of gender neutral pronouns. Z here was the pronoun. It's I've rarely heard it used by actual people. I've really only seen it in academic writing. We got to vote on having gender neutral bathrooms in our co-ed dorm, like, which felt very radical for 2001. And I was introduced to in a way that I hadn't as a younger person, like introduced to the concept of transness. And there was a part of me that was like, huh, am I that? Because I don't fit in this box that I've been put in. And I was like, no, I'm not that. Like, I don't feel like I'm actually a man. And so I was kind of like, oh, interesting, but oh well. And, you know, 15 years later, 14, 15 years later, I was living in the Bay Area, had just moved up to Nevada City, and had suddenly a lot of genderqueer friends. I came out as queer in college. So that has been a long time part of my understanding of myself. And there was this new conversation that was happening around the idea of being non-binary and this they, them pronoun, which I know a lot of us get really hung up on the grammar of it being plural. And I was hung up on the grammar of it when I first heard it. And then an acquaintance from the dance worlds wrote this really beautiful post. They had just encountered it. I don't know what pronoun they use now, so I'm going to use they as a default. They wrote this really beautiful reflection on how they felt that, like, to speak of the self as multiple felt like a real honoring of the truly multiple nature of self, that we're not, that none of us are just one thing. And it was such a beautiful reflection and expansion for me reading that. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm over my grammar hangup. And then of course there's the fact that we do use a singular they for people we don't know. And there's something in that of like, hey, somebody left their lights on. Like, do you know who it is? That kind of thing, where we extend this courtesy of not assuming that we know anything about somebody to people that are not in the space, and that we don't do that with those who are in front of us. I'm going to put a pin in that and come back to my personal story, because I can really go down a lot of side trails. So feel free to steer me back. So 2012, moved to the Bay, 13, 14, 15, am in this different conversation around there being gender identities that don't actually, that are not just male or female, right? That there's this other space that exists, and that actually this other space has perhaps always existed, has historically existed in many, many cultures across the world, and that it's being claimed by people now to not have to choose or transition from one to the other, which of course is a completely valid choice, but to actually be like, I want to hang out in a different space where I don't have to conform to either of these identities, either of these expectations, sets of expectations. And I get to claim the space to be myself beyond these categories, these imposed categories. And there were more and more people in my life who came out as non-binary. And I remember thinking in 2015, I was dating a non-binary person for the first time, and like, it just made so much sense to me, and I really felt them in that. And I remember thinking, and I remember saying out loud, probably to them and also to friends, like, wow, if this had been an option 14, 15 years ago, like, it would have been the escape hatch I would have taken. Like, I would have 100% jumped out of this woman box and like taken this other path. And I have put in so much work to try to like wrestle this box of womanhood and like feel like I can own it and claim it and be like, keep like mess, like keep pushing the boundaries of it, keep pushing the edges of it wider and wider so that I can actually exist as all of myself. And like, it's too hard one for me to just set it down now, right? Like I've been fighting this fight to make this thing work, this woman thing work for so long that I am not willing to let go of all of the labor and energy of that fight. And so I didn't. And so I continued to identify as a woman for a number of years. And then I think it was in 2020. I don't actually remember. Sometime between 2019 and 2021, where I just had the realization that I could set that fight down. And set down the, like, it, I could walk away from it. Like I could walk away from how long I'd been fighting and just claim a space that felt more expansive to me. Because the thing about staying in the box is that I can change my definition of what it means, but I'm still continually being confronted with other people's more limited, more narrow ideas and projections about what it means. And what happens when somebody sees me as she is that all of their ideas about what she means and what she gets to do and how she gets to behave and express herself and all of that, like all of those expectations and projections get pushed onto me and dropped. And then it's up to me to then dig myself out and like excavate myself from that mountain of projections, assumptions, expectations in order to actually be seen. And so I decided to start using they, them pronouns to claim the space of not knowing. And as a way to be like, okay, boatload of projections, you're going to stop right here and just fall into the space between us. And if there is enough care and curiosity, then we can meet each other in this space of unknowing and discover who we are to each other. And we can do that in a way that is supportive to who we understand ourselves to be. And so for me, like the practice of pronouns, of using pronouns, of choosing pronouns, of sharing our pronouns, whether we use the ones that we were assigned or not, is a practice of remembering and reminding ourselves and each other that we don't know all of the things that we think we know about someone just by looking. Right? Like I see you and I have my own history and associations with people who look like you. And so rather than remembering that you are a person I have just encountered who I actually know nothing or next to nothing about, like all of my assumptions and preconceptions and associations get in the way of my ability to actually see you and meet you where and as you are. Mm-hmm. And I think that gets in the way of us really being with each other. And there, you know, there are reasons for that, like in our biological evolution and the way that our ability to categorize based on sight and familiarity is part of how the human species survived, right? So like there is a biological imperative for why our brains work that way. And I feel like this is one of those places where we really need to harness the power of our consciousness to bridge the gap between the evolution of our biology, which is still living in a very different context, and the evolution of our society and where we are actually living together now.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing just like your story, your experience, and really helping us understand all the textures and layers that probably so many people go through along their journey of gender and identity and how do I present myself in the world? How am I seen in the world? And it it isn't a linear journey. It's like, it's all over the place. And this is only half of your life. Like, who knows what the second half of your life's journey is going to continue to unfold and look like. And what I'm really hearing is that for you specifically, like, you feel that using like she or him would be like she for in your instance was really limiting for the way that people were perceiving you. And so by using a more neutral, maybe androgynous pronoun, or just a plural pronoun, as you were saying, it opens up this space of mystery. It opens up this space of curiosity, of ambiguity, where instead of people having assumptions, they have curiosity. And I think that's really beautiful. And it really allows you to be your individualized self in terms, and instead of being boxed in. And as I'm listening to you talk this way, I'm like, wait, I want people to be like that when I introduce myself too. You know, I present myself very feminine and I do use the she pronoun. However, I feel really limited a lot of the times because of the way that I appear, because of the way that I dress, because of the way that I speak or that I act. And I'm curious, like, how can all of us, regardless of, because gender identity is different than sexual orientation, right? So like, how can more of us step into that place of curiosity and ambiguity? Do you see the future of that being like, we're all using alternative pronouns? We're like, do we become more androgynous and ambiguous? I'm not even sure if that's a word, but yeah, I'm just like kind of ranting with you. Like, what does the future of gender identity look like? And how do we get out of those rigid boxes and ways of perceiving one another, especially when we first meet one another?
It's a great question. I'd say number one, but like, how are we dreaming forward together, right? Like, how do we get from here to somewhere else? And there are a few pieces that I want to speak to in that. And one of them is that actually these days I will still default to they, them pronouns because it's easier for people. But I think as that's become more prevalent and also I'm going to say politicized, and it being politicized is not a problem, but the way that it's been politicized, I think there is a way that there are now a whole boatload of assumptions that come along with they, them, that that are certainly, they certainly feel more comfortable and more accurate to me. But again, like, it's like, how, I think the essence of your question is like, how do we get through this projection field of that we're all carrying around with us, right? That everybody is carrying around with them and putting in between us, right? It's like, we're seeing each other like this so much of the time. Mm-hmm. And ultimately we can't change anybody but ourselves, right? And so I think it's like, the question is like, how do I show up when I meet someone new? And how do I take that moment where I'm like, okay, all the assumptions based on this person's size, weight, skin color, age, the way they're dressed, like all of these things, right? Like everything that I can see about a person, I have some kind of association with, some kind of assumption that I'm making about them. And like, how can I make an active practice of taking a beat, taking a breath, and being like, okay, boatload of assumptions. Like, I'm gonna set you over here. And then come back and be like, hey, person, I don't know anything about, like, what do you want me to know about you? Like, how do you want to shape my perception of you so that I can support you in your perception of yourself, both with you in how I interact with you, and also as an ally to you in conversations about you that happen when you are not there, right? Because this is one of those things, I think, where a lot of people are like, I'm going to do the right thing and I'm going to use they to this person's face. And then when we're having a conversation with our friend, we're like, oh yeah, he, blah, 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 she, blah, blah, blah. And we get a little lazy when we're not being held accountable to the person being right there. And so it's like, how do we practice that kind of allyship when like someone else is like, oh, this person, he, and you're like, actually they use they, right? Like, how do we actually interject on behalf of the people that we know to be allies for their identities in the world? And it's an act of practice, and it's an act of care, I think. And it takes some work, right? Because like habit is efficient. Assumptions are efficient. Habit is efficient. Like, it's part of how our brain is able to process the million bits of information per second. It's the numbers higher. I actually don't know. It's like, there are so many unconscious, whatever. I was learning about this recently, but I'm not going to quote it right. But there are tons of bits of information, like millions of bits of information that our sensory system is processing under the level of our consciousness, and like automating processes, automating thought patterns, automating by creating habits is like part of how we're able to navigate this very complex world where we're being constantly bombarded with information. And so actually slowing down, I think, is part of it. And I think also for people who use their assigned pronouns, like one way to do it is actually when we introduce each other. And this came from a friend of mine, Sarah Bunting. I was talking with her about an experience I had being in a circle for a workshop, and the facilitator was like, names and optional pronouns. And in a circle of 40 people, the facilitator and I were the only people who shared our pronouns. And as a gender nonconforming person, like, that felt so uncomfortable to me that everyone else was so comfortable with the default assumptions that they didn't feel the need to contribute their pronouns. And when I shared with my friend about this, because I also am a teacher, and so like it has, that experience has certainly impacted the way that I invite the sharing of pronouns in spaces, and I do like to give people the option, but I also start by sharing some of what I've shared with you about like sharing our pronouns as a practice of remembering that all the things we think we don't know, we don't actually know. And generally the response to that is that people volunteer. But when I said this to my friend who uses the pronouns that she was assigned, she was like, oh, you know what that makes me think? Like, I'm going to start sharing my pronouns when I introduce myself, to be like, hi, I'm Sarah, she, her, nice to meet you, right? And so actually volunteering your pronouns as a cis person, like someone who is cisgender, like, is a way to advance this conversation, is a way to be in that active reminding and remembering, right? Because it's like, I could look at you and think that I know, but if you tell me, then that is actually you volunteering information that helps me to shape my perception. And so there's something in normalizing that, that I think is a step in the direction that we're trying to go. And my hope is that where we're going is to a place, to a time and place, to a way of relating where nobody's self-expression, life possibilities, relationship possibilities are limited or even really shaped by their genitals, right? Like, I think most people, even really conservative people, when you frame it that way, right? It's like, do you want your child's life possibilities, what they get to do, who they get to be, how they get to exist in the world, how they get to relate to and express themselves? Like, do you want that to be limited by their genitals? Right? Like, that seems really weird when you say it that way, right? Like, I don't think anybody actually wants that for themselves or for anybody else. And so, like, my hope is that we get to a place where we see each other's bodies and we recognize that that doesn't mean anything in particular about who they are. And we just are in that open space where, you know, where identity matters less. And I think that's true about racial identity, about ethnic identity, about skin color. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that we are not there yet, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think there are a lot of people, particularly white people, particularly people who have a lot of privilege, be that financial and economic privilege, educational privilege, like mobility privilege, able bodies, all of, like, there is, I think, a tendency that I'm seeing where people like want to jump ahead to this identity-less space and just be like, let's just let it all go, right? Like, let's just be in our humanity. I see your humanity and I value it. And like, let's just like let go of identity because it's just getting in the way. And as much as I want us to get to that place, we're not there yet. And to get there, we have to grapple with the history of what it means to be in a certain body, to like, whether that's a gendered body or a racialized body. We have to grapple with that history and how that history is shaping this current context and how those historical influences are still impacting us differently, right? And until we address that, until there is equity, until there are reparations, like, we don't get to just jump ahead to that easy breezy fun place where identity doesn't matter.
Yeah, I love this different perspective, because so many of us, like in these spiritual communities, we are the visionaries. We want, we're the new bringers, we're from the future, whatever, you know. And it's really easy to do that spiritual bypassing sometimes and not even consciously doing it. Just really like having like that positive mindset, but not acknowledging the like the power that these identities hold with them. And like you're saying, the history that the identities hold in them. And I'm curious to hear you expand upon that more. Like, what does that look like, grappling with the history? How do we go back, and without like getting stuck in the past, but how do we gently and intentionally move through those spaces so that we can move into that utopia future that we all want?
Oh, that's a great question. And the short answer is, I don't know. Like, I can't really answer that for all of us. And what it occurs to me to share in this moment is, so I was up in Washington last week, right? Big privilege. I was able to take a flight up there, right? I think part of it is recognizing, learning to recognize the privilege that we do hold. I think that's a big piece of it, is starting by like recognizing the privilege that we hold, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I am a queer, genderqueer Jewish person of Jewish ancestry, which is a whole complicated thing in this moment that that we won't get into. But I'm gonna say we won't get into it. And also, like, I do have to say, one, just acknowledge like what is happening in the name of Jewish safety right now is not making Jews anywhere more safe. And it needs to stop. It's not making us more safe. And I'll leave it there. Thank you for letting me say that here. But getting back to the topic at hand, what I will say is that as a person with these invisible minority identities, because when I am out in the world, I am often perceived as like a nice white lady, right? And so my queerness and my genderqueerness and my Jewishness are not particularly visible. And so I am often misread, and that there's a way that there's a lot of discomfort in that for me, but there's also a lot of privilege, right? It's the privilege of pathing. And so like, there are ways in which in a lot of spaces I am more safe because of the way that I am perceived than someone who is visibly queer, visibly genderqueer, visibly Jewish, visibly part of another ethnic minority, or a racial minority, right? So there's a lot of privilege that I embody, and there is nuance there that, like, if I were to reveal any of these identities, I might suddenly become much less safe, right? And so, like, are these invisible minority identities that I hold, I think part of it is recognizing, like, where is the space where it is appropriate for me to claim space around those? And, like, that's probably not going to be in a mixed race space, right? It's probably not going to be in a space where other people who are dealing with much more visible minority identities, who are consistently experiencing the impact of moving through space with those identities, right? Like, in that conversation, like, that's not the space for me to be like, but I have all this stuff too, right? And then if I'm in perhaps like a white affinity space, like, then there's that's a space where, like, this perspective that I hold then becomes a lot more relevant, because it's illuminating something that now a lot of the people in the room maybe don't have that perspective, right? And when I was up in Washington last week, I started to tell this story. I was having a conversation with somebody about access needs in a workshop that we were in, or not workshop, but like a space that we were in, a shared space. And so this piece of, like, naming access needs, coming from the disability justice movement, is like a part that in some circles is now getting added into, like, our intros with our names and our pronouns and our access needs. And there is a piece that I think is really important to acknowledge and very overlooked, which is that we all have access needs, right? We all have access needs to be in a shared space. And for people whose access needs are easily met, their instinctual response to that question is to say, I don't have access needs, right? And to say I don't have access needs is very different than recognizing, oh, my access needs are already being met here, right? Like, the things that I need to show up in this space were already provided without me even having to ask. That's huge. That is huge privilege, right? And so I think the visibilizing of those kinds of privileges, right? That, like, we can just show up in a space and it accommodates us without us having to ask for any additional accommodation. Like, that's a really big deal. And so I think owning that is perhaps a pathway towards building more from that place of recognition, building more grace and more will and willingness and more generosity in how we show up to accommodate other people's access needs that are maybe a little bit bigger of a lift.
Like, one reflection on this is, what I'm hearing is, it's almost like when we're facing anything inside of us, a shadow, a fear, a trauma, the way to move through that isn't just to bury it and say, oh, I feel great if I feel like crap. It's like, it's just simply the process of acknowledging that it's there and that it's real and that it's alive. Like, in that place, we are meeting it, where we're meeting our privilege, right? We're meeting the limitations in identity. We're meeting the suffering of people who don't feel like they have fit in historically, culturally. And just maybe through that simple act for so many of us of just acknowledging and witnessing it and holding it in it as it is, with compassion and truth and honesty, like, perhaps that is just a simple pathway. Like, perhaps it doesn't need to be this complex methodical solution. It's just presence with what is, instead of like over and looking at and bypassing it. And maybe that in itself is the medicine that's really just needed in the collective, and through that we will naturally evolve into that space.
Yeah, and something you spoke into before was around this concept of getting curious. And I think if we begin to acknowledge where we are, acknowledge this inherent privilege that we carry in a variety of ways, we can then get compassionately curious in these spaces and ask questions that maybe we were too taboo or we're scared to ask. You know, like, what is it like to walk a mile in your shoes? Like, how are you seeing the world? How are you walking through the world? What challenges are you facing? Like, how can I learn about them? How can I support them? How can I be there for them? As opposed to turning a cheek, you know. And there's a level of personal responsibility that's coming up for me in ways that I've done that are now being illuminated. And through even this conversation, I feel this curiosity and compassion and coming through my being and desiring to move through the world differently from a space of like, I know nothing, you know, like I know what I know through the perspective and the lens that I was given, but like in response to everyone else that I encounter and meet, I know nothing. And I think through everything that we've been sharing today, that feels like an anchor. And if we can wake up every day and say, I know nothing, like, how can I get curious in the spaces that I'm in about the people that are around me, about how they see the world? Like, I think that can also stand as a really strong, I don't want to say turning point, but a start. Like, it's a start, you know, to move through the world as a student and recognize like how most of what we think we know is not what we know, how we were taught it. And it was projected onto us, like you were saying, from the before we were even brought into the world. So yeah, I feel really, really very grateful for all that's coming through this conversation right now. And it's very important that we're talking about it, and I'm really grateful that we are. And yeah, what was illuminated earlier, I was just kind of sitting with it. I've been quite quiet. This conversation was just how much I've fought as an individual to be who I am outside of the space of others' projections. And I just was kind of like these pinpoint moments in my life of like, from the smallest thing of like, oh, women aren't supposed to drink beer, or like, oh, honey, like, why don't you like dolls? You know, you should be wearing a dress, just to like, I mean, it's just shown up fucking everywhere. And recognizing that I've been fighting my whole life to stand in my truth, in my identity, and not really knowing what that is, but knowing that what's been given to me hasn't fit and hasn't felt good. And, you know, fighting these concepts of being the divine feminine and like embodying the masculine within to manifest my divine union partner. And it's just like, it's feeling so fucking heavy right now for me. So yeah, thank you for your patience through this conversation, as I've been really present with what's happening and also like processing these, a lifetime of projections, I guess would be the best way to put it. So
Yeah, thank you for all of that, both of you. And I feel like, yeah, yes, right? Yes to it being a good start, right? Like the acknowledgement, I think that's really the heart of it, right? Is like, and that's the piece about not bypassing to this utopic future and not just jumping ahead, is like, we have to start where we are. And the only way to do that is to acknowledge what is. And as you were saying, Heather, you know, we can only see what we see from where we stand. I imagine you're familiar with the concept of intersectionality from Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw.
I'm not. I would like to be.
I'm going to say, like, look that up. Intersectionality, Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw. Because I don't feel qualified to really give you the full perspective, but my understanding of it I can share is that each of us as an individual stands at a crossroads of intersecting identities, and those are gender identities and racial identities and familial identities and societal identities, like they can be, you know, like the identity of like the country, national identities, sexual identities, right? Like anything that is an identity makes up the intersection where we're standing. And so we're all standing at a very unique intersection. And so the way that I kind of relate to this concept is like, I can only see what I can see from where I stand. And so I need you. I need you to tell me what you see from where you stand, because there are things that you can see that I cannot, right? There are things you can see that I cannot see from where I stand. And I am committed, and I think most of us, I hope most of us that are in, you know, conscious community are really committed and understand that, like, to commit to our individual and collective evolution requires us to commit to the constant illumination of our blind spots, right? Like, there's always going to be that thing that I can't see that I need you to, like, take a look at and tell me about, right? And then I can bring it into my consciousness, and then I can come into relationship with it in a deliberate way. But there's always going to be another thing that I can't see. And so I think, you know, what you're saying, Elfina, about like starting with the acknowledgement, and then if we're moving into from the acknowledgement of what is into curiosity, and that curiosity then takes us into action, right? Because I think that piece of like, okay, and then how do I not just hold this as an awareness, but also like, how does my care come into service, right? And that's not just the perspective that I hold, it's the way that I show up, it's the questions that I ask, it's the way that I meet someone else's request, right? Or maybe ask if there is anything that they need, right? Because it's like, I actually can't know what anyone else needs unless they tell me. And so it's also this remembering, like, that we're not here to do any savior bullshit, right? We're not here to save anyone but ourselves, but we can offer our support. And I think the best way that we can do that is to remember that we don't know what anybody else needs, and to make ourselves available as we can. And that's going to vary moment by moment, right? Because we also don't want to get into the martyrdom model of goodness where like I sacrifice myself so that you can be okay, right? But like, part of acknowledging what is acknowledging like what I'm resourced to do, how I'm resourced to show up, and also to be willing to continually, and with of course moments of rest, like lean out into that uncomfortable space that is where growth happens, right? Growth doesn't happen in our comfort zone. Growth happens just outside of it, not so far that we fall into strain, right? It's like we have to learn to listen. And I think the body is such an ally in this when we actually like drop down and we're like, oh wow, I feel stuff. Like I feel emotions, I feel sensations. And we're mostly not doing that a lot of the time, right? It's so easy to be disembodied. Our culture supports it. Capitalism supports it. Like the mythology of original sin supports it. Like there are so many cultural and historical threads that are invested in our disembodiment to keep us complicit in these systems that really only benefit a very few at the expense of most of the rest of us, but to varying degrees, depending on our positionality on the bodies that we're actually in, right? Like there's a lot of variables there. And I think especially as white folks, like there is a responsibility to use the privilege that we have to like, to get uncomfortable, right? Like, and that's that thing coming back to access needs, right? Like I think the more comfortable I am, the more responsibility I have to lean into my discomfort in service to growth and in service to rebalancing. And it's not about being uncomfortable. It's about recognizing that there are so many people who are living in constant discomfort, in constant pain, in constant, like, without safety, right? Like, and I think for a lot of folks who embody a lot of privilege, particularly white privilege, there is a way that we have been taught to conflate discomfort with a lack of safety. And those are not the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And if we run away from our discomfort, then we're not showing up to what is, right? And we're not practicing accountability for how we're participating in what is. And so I think that piece of, like, how do I use all of, like, the space and privilege that I have to, like, learn about my nervous system, to get more resourced in my nervous system so that I can move through this very dysregulated and dysregulating world as a force for co-regulation, right? Like, how do I work to become more balanced in my own system so that my presence, which in the skin that I'm in, may actually be dysregulating for certain folks, for non-white folks. Like, can I be regulated enough that, like, I'm not then contributing even more by, like, my own precarious comfort, right? That, like, in the face of someone else having a feeling, that I suddenly crumble and go into my own reactivity, right? And I know we're getting a little off topic, but it feels all very related, because this happens often with, when people are confronted with genderqueer folks, with people who identify outside of the gender binary. Like, people often misgender my dog. My dog has a vulva. I haven't had an explicit verbal conversation with her about her gender identity, but I do use the pronoun she and her for my dog. She hasn't gotten mad about it, to my knowledge. And she's also, like, a pit bull mix. And so often when I'm out walking her, people are like, oh, he's so cute. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Yeah, she's really cute. And they hear the pronoun shift and they get so sweetly apologetic. They're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I misgendered your dog. And I'm like, it's cool. She's not hung up on gender, right? And then we encounter a person and someone's like, oh yeah, I was talking to her. And I say, actually, and this is the part I didn't get to earlier, actually, I like the pronoun e, which I've started using, just the letter, he, she, e. It's singular. It feels really spacious. The it's e, e-m, e-m, air is the possessive, e-i-r or e-i-r-s. I've been using it since the beginning of the year. Nobody really uses it. It was in a book I heard, and though it does exist outside of that, but it's just like, oh, it feels like a breath of fresh air. They, them is a great default. So if I tell someone, anyway, getting back to the point, if someone is like, oh, Hallie, she, and I'm like, actually, I don't use she, her pronouns. I use this other pronoun. I use they, them. I use EM. And they get so reactive, right? It's like, we're so afraid of doing something wrong or being wrong, and that we make it about ourselves. And like, if we could just in that moment have the grace to be like, oh, thank you for letting me know, right? Like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize. Thank you for letting me know. Like we do with my dog, right? Like if we could have the same grace with a person correcting the pronoun as we do with someone correcting the pronoun for our dog, like it would be a real different place. And yeah, so I think that's part of it, right? It's like, how do we acknowledge what is, get curious about what other people are seeing and experiencing, and like, let our curiosity generate allyship and action in support of meeting our own needs, in support of meeting other people's needs, in support of creating new cultures that do lead to this place and space where, like, we do just get to be whoever we are in whatever body we're in. And it's mm-hmm. not a big deal.
Yeah, like removing our egos as much as possible to come back to that beginner's mindset. And it's natural and normal that we're going to make mistakes, that we're going to say things that offend people. And we just take responsibility in that. And we just lean into more curiosity and compassion as a way of moving forward. Yeah. This is just such a beautiful, insightful conversation. I really feel like I'm really seeing my privilege in a whole new lens, like you're saying, from a different angle, that we all need each other. We're walking each other home, is a saying that Heather and I like to use. And yeah, and with that privilege comes responsibility. And I think it's really about not scapegoating that responsibility, but owning that responsibility. And doing the things that are sometimes really uncomfortable, but when we have that safety, like you're saying, comfort and safety are not synonymous; they're different things. We can feel safe to put ourselves in more uncomfortable situations that might stretch our norms, that might stretch our perspectives, that might stretch our egoic mind, right? That is associated with these different things. So we're wrapping up the conversation now, but I wanted to just give you a couple more minutes if there's anything else that you wanted to end with and share to the world around this topic.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I like that. We're walking each other home. It's beautiful. Heather, do you have any other thoughts or questions? I feel like I don't have anything particular in this moment. I would love to say a last thing, but I don't know what it is yet. Love to hear from you if you have anything.
Passing. Yeah, just to piggyback on everything Alfina shared and just express gratitude for the vessel that you are and how compassionately you share your truth. It's served as a force of inspiration for me and continues to, and I'm really grateful to have you in my life and that our paths crossed. And I'm just really humbled. I'm like deeply humbled to be in your presence. And I feel a new layer of compassion, as Alfina was talking about, just really opening up in my heart. And yeah, recognizing my inherent privilege and how like that's provided a lot of comfort for me. And so in that comfort, when you're not uncomfortable, you stay in the comfort, right? Like there's not a lot of cultivation or like curiosity to go into that space. And so conversations like this are just so important. And I'm committed to curiosity and compassion. It's just the word that keeps coming up moving forward. So thank you. Thank you is what I want to say.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And that I think that was what I needed to hear to know what to say also is like, yeah, that compassion that we need to extend, like we also need to extend towards ourselves, right? Like we have to give ourselves grace too. And I think, like I often say, I'm here for disarmament. Like there are a lot of people who are here to tear it down. And I think that is, I'm going to say, I think that's necessary work, right? Like there are the people who are here to be disruptive. And like, and I used to lament not being like more visibly queer and disruptive in my presence. And what I've realized is that like infiltration is also a superpower, right? That I can enter a space. And because I read the way I do, like often people who have inherited opinions about queerness, about genderqueerness, about Jews, about, you know, like who maybe hold prejudice from a place that doesn't actually include knowing people who hold these identities, that like because of the way people read me, like there is a way that I can start a conversation or be in a conversation with someone and build some sense of comfort there, right? And then they've already decided they're comfortable with me, and then I can introduce these ideas. And I think that that these ideas that are maybe challenging, right? I can introduce that like this person you just decided that you like is actually this thing that you think you don't like, right? And then there is an invitation to grapple with the cognitive dissonance of that. And so I think it's really important. And there are so many ways to do this. So I'm not going to make anybody wrong in the way that they're showing up to do their work in the world. But the way that I'm here to do it, and the thing that feels really important to me, is that if we invalidate the ground that someone is standing on, we give them no incentive to listen to anything we have to say, right? Like, if we start by invalidating the ground that someone is standing on and making them wrong, then we're, you know, then they are immediately on defense. They're going to get reactive. They're not going to hear what we have to say. And so extending that grace outward, I think, is really important. And also extending that grace inward to ourselves is really important, right? Like, recognizing the privilege that we hold is so essential. And then adding shame and guilt on top of that is actually just a way to recenter ourselves, right? And so it's like, that part doesn't help. So let's skip that part. Don't feel bad about what you have. Don't feel bad about it. Don't make yourself bad. Don't make yourself wrong. That's just another trap where you're going to then waste all of your energy feeling sorry for yourself, feeling bad about yourself, right? So like, what if we can acknowledge our privilege and then get curious about what we can do with it, right? Like, how we can leverage that privilege in service to others, in service to the world that we are that we are dreaming into being, right? So like, don't get lost in the guilt trap. I did it for years, right? So like, just don't do that, right? You can have a moment of it. You can metabolize it. You can tell your friend about it, but then just get curious. And like, from that curiosity, like, lean into taking action, mm-hmm. right? And take action and be willing to get feedback, right? It's like, I step on your foot by accident. That doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. And so if you tell me, right, then I can be like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were standing there. Like, I'm going to pay more attention, right? And so that thing about like, get curious, be available to recognize that like, intention and impact don't always align. And so be available to hear about impact and like, and make repair, right? Like, harm is inevitable. Be available to create repair. Be curious about how that can happen. Don't assume you know how to do that for somebody else, right? And so it's just like, how do we just keep showing up to what is and bring all of the resource that we have to that, to share it?
Mic drop. Yes. Just taking a moment of silence just to breathe into the potency of this transmission. Thank you so much, Hallie, for coming on to Taboo Talks and just sharing your heart and your story and stirring the pot a bit and bringing that discomfort online in the most activating and compassionate way. Mm-hmm. So grateful to have you, and so grateful for each and every one of you who are tuning into this conversation, who really make these talks possible. And yeah, thank you for your support. We wouldn't be here without you. And to catch this full episode, if you're just tuning in now, or you want to listen to this as well, we have a Spotify podcast channel, Taboo Talks, as well as our YouTube channel. And also we're on Instagram at Cis Society World. You can catch more conversations like this around all sorts of taboo topics. Again, we are Cis Society, a global community that's rewriting the narratives of taboo around sensuality, intimacy, and sexuality. So join us as we continue conversations like this to flip the script and shatter societal norms. See you next week for another episode as we pioneer the new earth together, hand in hand.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure to be here with you both.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Taboo Talks. We wouldn't be here without you. And don't miss a single second of these juicy conversations where we continue traversing the new earth with leading minds. Subscribe and share these important conversations to be a part of the cis society movement.